You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
7 minutes past eight. Good morning, and thanks, Mark. Mark back again with the news headlines at 8 o'clock. What's coming up in the show today? Well, last week, the Australian Bureau of Statistics warned our population growth is slowing. Now, is this going to slow down or pose any risk to our economy and pull the rug out from underneath our property markets? We'll find out about that today. There are signs that all markets in Australia are starting to slow just a touch. Sydney clearance rates are falling sharply. Melbourne is at a risk of oversupply, and Brisbane is slowing at the top end. Will the RBA pull the trigger on the rates on Tuesday? Well, we'll try and source some information on that as well. Our market focus this weekend is on Ipswich, a delightful area. In fact, I was born in Ipswich. Still one of Southeast Queensland's most affordable areas, as you'll hear, and currently enjoying a lot of interest by buyers, particularly from investors. And we'll find out the magic three reasons why that is the case. There's still some good times ahead for Ipswich, and that's certainly going to be the focus for us today in the show when we talk to Dr. Andrew Wilson. APRA's moves to make it tougher for investors to get finance is seeing a lot of investors retreat. Properties in some of the classic Sydney investor suburbs are just not selling. So the question we're going to ask this morning is, has the move by APRA and the banks been a little bit too harsh? Have they made it too hard for investors to get into the market, or even desirable to get into the market? So what's been the impact of that? We'll canvass those and other thoughts today. Tomorrow in the show, I've got to remind you once again that because of daylight saving, we switched to an hour earlier, so we'll be on air between 7 and 8. And tomorrow we'll be canvassing the question about if you've ever thought of quitting your job and making a living from property, either developing or renovating or flipping or living off your property portfolio. We'll find out if it's possible, and if it is, how you can go about doing it.
You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
Had a question sent in to us from Monica. Thank you for this, Monica. Simply asking whether or not houses make better investments than apartments. I'm going to ask the question of Patrick Bright, who is a buyer's agent from EPS Property Search. What's your advice to Monica?
Yeah, it's a good question, Kevin. And I would say that yes and no would be the answer there, and in certain circumstances, because it depends on the market that you're buying in. You know, you could, and it also depends on what the public and the buyers are demanding in those markets.
Does it depend on not the type of market, but the market, as in the suburb, as to what type of buyer you're going to be appealing to or tenant?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're looking in, a capital city, for instance, I know this because I know Sydney pretty well, having been in it, working in it for over 15 years. The market in the inner ring, over a third of suburbs, the capital growth, for instance, is better with apartments than it is with houses. Go back 30 years ago, that was not the case. So the market's changed, and it's what the public and the demand is for. So you've got to have that aspect to it. If you go to out of a capital city, majority of the stock out there is housing on larger land blocks. You'll find, because I've looked at it, that those will do better than the apartments in a regional area.
Those inner city suburbs you're talking about, in some of the cap cities, we see that changing. As they want more density into some of these, they're pulling down those houses and putting up apartment blocks. Obviously, that has contributed to that change as well, Patrick.
It would have had a contribute, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the demand. It's what it's what people want. They want to live closer in. I mean, if you've been travelled a bit and you've seen places like, for instance, Hong Kong and Singapore, it's 90% apartments. And people want the lock and leave lifestyle. They want views. They want all of that happening. And so if that's where the demand is, that's where the price pressure will be, and that's where the growth will be, and that's where the rents will be. So you've got to have an awareness of the market you're buying into and where that market's going and where the future is of that market.
Just to help Monica a little bit, is there a tipping point with the amount of stock? If you look at a particular suburb, for instance, and maybe it's got 40% units and 60% houses, but there tend to be more units coming up, would that be an indicator for you that maybe it's time to look at apartments, that might be shifting a little bit?
Maybe, but again, I would look at it carefully. So let's pick on a suburb, for instance, say DY which is on Sydney's northern beaches. Now, apartments in that market, there's about 85% of that market is apartments. So, and about 15% houses. In that market, houses do better than apartments because there's too many apartments for the demand that really wants to be there. So there isn't really a blanket rule that you could put to it. You've really got to study the market, the type of people that want to be in that market, the demographics of it now and where it's likely to go, and then make your decision based on that. So for like the inner west, there's a lot of apartments being built in the inner west, but still terraces tend to outperform, right? So where you're going to generally get better performance with an apartment is in an area often with views and some uniquenesses about it. And so that's something you've got to weigh in.
Yeah, history, of course, leaves great clues, doesn't it? I mean, if you go back and look at the history of an area and analyse it, over what period should you go back, do you think? Is it good enough to go back, say, 3 to 5 years?
At least. I mean, look, when I'm buying a property, I look at it this way. I go, look back even 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and I say, what was the prime real estate 30-odd, 40 years ago? It's generally the prime stuff today. And guess what? It's probably going to be the prime stuff in the next 30 or 40 years. And that's how I like to make my investment decision, is history leaves clues, but you've also got to factor in where the future's going. And the future's going towards that type of product, say a more apartment-style product, and you're in the right location, you should do very well. Particularly if you're in a landlocked location, you've got something unique about it, you've got water views, that sort of thing is very appealing to the market.
You're very interesting, mate. Thank you. And certainly answered Monica's question once again, Monica. Thank you very much for your question. And Patrick, to you, thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure. Thanks, as always, Kevin.
You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
Claire's on the line. G'day, Claire. How are you?
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. You'd have to be on a day like this.
Wouldn't you?
Yes.
What a top weekend indeed.
I know. Beautiful. How can I help you?
It's about I rent a premise, a house, yeah. An old fibro house. It's very old.
Yep.
And I have been here for 5 years, and it is difficult now for me to move. I don't need to. But it's just that my owner, who resides next door, and he is obviously the landlord, he doesn't do any kind of maintenance, and he's never done any improvements in 5 years. What justifies, any legislation is there that justifies him putting up the rent?
Okay, there's no legislation as such, but you
no.
can't. I mean, if you find that it's unfair, you can actually complain about that.
Yeah, to the RTA. Mm,
You can.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
But it has to be reasonable, and they have to prove that it can be. It's to market. So, the thing that I would do is a private landlord. Is it or is it through an agent?
Very, very difficult to converse with.
Yeah. Well, I would actually. Yeah, it's going to be really hard for you. But I would call in some real estate agents, get them to give you a market appraisal, just to make sure that you know that what he's asking. You're convinced it's not. It's more than market.
Convinced it's more. I wanted to say not maybe than the condition of this premises.
Oh, okay. So it's more about the conditions.
It's more about that it's an old house. He's made it very clear that after I signed the very first lease that he was never going to do anything to it.
Yeah, look, it's a call you're going to have to make. I don't know that you can actually do anything, unless it's unsafe, of course, and then you've got some cause for action there. You can send him a notice to remedy breach. So if you find that there's anything that's unsafe or that needs to be fixed, that's what I would be doing. Send him a notice to remedy breach. So,
but
in other words,
no
it's a breach of the act.
Well,
there's legislation against him not making it safe for you, but in turn, there's two things there, whether or not it's safe and then also whether he's charging you more rent. So if he's charging you reasonable market rent, there's not a lot you can do, but I'd be getting some assessments on that. If there's anything that concerns you, I'd certainly would be challenging him with that notice to remedy breach, Claire. Hope
that
helps.
Thank you for taking the time. Enjoy your week ahead and may the best team win tomorrow.
Yeah, indeed. Got to be the Broncos, hasn't it?
Oh, well, I'm a half and half tomorrow.
Well, whoever wins, Queensland's going to win. That's all I can say.
That's right. Thank you.
Good
so
on you,
much.
Claire. Lovely talking to you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Simon's on the line too. G'day, Simon. How are you?
Hi, good, thanks. Just a quick question in relation to domain and the domain website, more importantly.
Yep.
I'd just like to know, like, I know companies change the website from time to time. When they changed the domain website, probably about, I don't know, 12 months ago or whatever, they had a button you could click on that said back to the original, as in the original domain website.
Yep.
So I'd just not like to know why that's not there, and I thought maybe you could ask your domain contact person.
Yeah, well, I will. In fact, there's a very good question that was raised yesterday in Claire's show about Home Price Guide, which is a site that's powered by Domain, which helps you work out what the prices are. Since that call, I had some very good contacts and conversations with the people from Domain, and I'm hoping to have them on the show tomorrow. So listen in, and I will specifically ask them that question. So what was it, the back to button, was it?
Well, no, it was a button that said back to original. So the original search process that you actually had, say, 12 months or 18 months ago. Mm. I prefer that compared to the way it looks today. I don't like the way it looks today.
Simon, can you hang on? I want to get your phone number, and we will follow up, and I'll have someone from Domain on the show tomorrow. I'm hoping that we can set that up for tomorrow morning. Okay, so listen in and we'll tell you.
Okay, not a problem. Thank you.
Good man. Thank you very much. Any question you got, any comment, we'd love to take it. And we will have Andrew Wilson on, who is the senior economist from Domain. He may not be able to answer. That's a rather technical question. We'll tackle that. We'll tackle that one.
You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
Last week, the Australian Bureau of Statistics warned that our population growth is slowing. Is this slowdown going to pose a bit of a risk to our economy and pull the rug out from underneath our property markets? Well, there's already a lot of talk about our property market peaking, our economy falling into a recession and a property bubble. Here we go again. The old bubble. Is it going to burst? Does it even exist? Let's have a look at this. Michael Yardney joins me. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Kevin.
So many questions for early Saturday morning.
Yes, too much to think so early in the morning.
Well, I'm sure you'll handle it. What are the latest population figures show, Michael?
Well, we've started to slow down our population growth, mainly due to fewer people coming from overseas. It's estimated that our population grew to about 23.8 million people now, but that's only 1.4% growth. We used to grow at about 1.8% per annum, Kevin.
Is that right?
Well, they said that, we've got to put it in perspective. We're still growing faster than most developed nations. But a lot of people have been talking about a big Australia. I think in general, we have been counting on this population growth to buoy our economy, to boost our construction industry, to boost our property markets, Kevin. So you're right, it has posed a few questions.
So why is it slowing?
Well, as I said, it's mainly due to lower migration. The Australian Bureau of Statistics estimates that 173,000 people migrated to Australia, but that's down about 16%. So that's quite a big drop, Kevin. On the other hand, we're still making more babies than people are dying, so natural population growth is going up, but it's really the migration that's going down, Kevin.
Mate, I wondered when I read it whether it had anything to do with the end of the mining boom.
Sure, Kevin, I think you're right there. The mining boom brought lots of new migrants to Australia, and the figures showed the impact of this in particular on the resource-focused states, on Western Australia and Northern Territory. Net overseas migration to Western Australia dropped 71%, Kevin.
Goodness
so,
gracious.
In fact, not many people
are
moving to Western Australia.
That's massive.
Yeah. It is. And, Kevin, it's all got to do with jobs. Yeah. So now people are not going as much to Western Australia or the Northern Territory. And even internal migration, people going from one state to another, they're moving out of Western Australia. And interestingly, they're moving to Victoria, where there's a lot of jobs. And Queensland also has a net migration, people coming from other states to it. Mm. And we know there's lots of good reasons for that.
Isn't that interesting, Michael? You talked there about that slowing down in Western Australia. And we've seen what's happened to the property market there. You look at Melbourne, where they may be moving to, and what's happening there. I wonder if there's a direct correlation there.
It has to do with jobs, Kevin. People are moving to Melbourne not because of the weather. They're moving to Melbourne because there's a lot of jobs.
You wouldn't go there for the weather, I can tell you.
No, it really has to do with the sort of industries that are creating jobs. So going back over the last 10 years or so, a lot of it had to do with the mining boom, and now it's really more related to service industries, and most of those jobs are being created in Sydney and Melbourne. 9 out of 10 people are actually employed in service industries nowadays, including you, including me, health, education, finance, banking, the hospitality industry. A lot of Queensland's employed in that as well. And that's why people are coming, and that's why people are moving.
So what are the economic implications here?
Well, Kevin, the slowdown is certainly going to have significant economic ramifications. If you think about it, almost every economist, politician, business person, they all became big believers in this big Australia, the migration boosting our economy. One of the good implications, though, Kevin, the positive side is it's actually kept our unemployment rates down. Remember a while ago, people were worried it was going to go to 8%, 9%, 10%. That didn't really happen because we didn't have all these new people coming in. So even though we weren't creating more jobs, we didn't have that many more people to fill. But I think there's three other really good implications I'd like to talk about, if that's okay.
Please, yes. Yeah.
One is that we're going to have more overseas visitors coming to Australia because I think in the next little while, our Australian dollar is going to remain low. And I also think interest rates are going to remain low, Kevin, because the lack of population growth pushing economic growth is going to mean our dollar is going to be remain low. Good, more overseas visitors. I think also Australians are going to find it harder to travel overseas. Wasn't that long ago that our dollar was worth one US dollar? It's only worth 70 cents now.
Yeah.
It costs us 30% more to travel overseas.
And boy, don't you feel it when you go overseas too?
Well, one does.
It's best not to make those comparisons. Just spend up.
Hold your holiday.
And worry about it later. Yeah.
But I think what that means, Kevin, is more of us are going to travel domestically.
Yes.
And Kevin, that's good for our economy and particularly good for Queensland, which is the holiday.
I'm going to ask you in a moment what it all means to property, but you mentioned there about interest rates. What's your tip for Tuesday?
I think everyone suggests things are going to remain steady this time round. I believe over the next year, though, it's likely that interest rates are going to drop another one or two times, maybe 0.5% to stimulate our slowing economy, Kevin.
Yeah, because Melbourne Cup is always a time when a lot of speculation about, you know, is that going to be the Melbourne Cup drop? And maybe it will happen this year.
Well, it happened in previous years, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
That's good. You're right there. I don't think this time round, I think it's going to be more steady as she goes.
Okay.
But probably early next year, Kevin.
Yeah. Oh, well, of course. We're still a month away from the Melbourne Cup, Michael, but who knows what's going to happen in the next month. So the bottom
line... One
more
thing, Kevin, Chinese investment capital is going to keep coming into our shores. It's going to keep pouring in again because of our low dollar.
Yeah. So, Matt, the bottom line here for property, what is it?
Well, for property, I think it means that we're probably building too many houses. Currently, we're building around 200,000...
We're building too many, are we?
Well, there was a requirement because we were undersupplied in some areas.
Yes.
So currently the building approvals are for 200,000. If they all get built, we're going to build one house for every 1.6 extra person. But we don't need that many because most households have 2.6 people in them. So we better be careful, Kevin, because there will be impacts from the slower economic and population growth.
Yeah, that's a timely warning, Michael, because we've seen the market in Australia quite healthy because we had such an undersupply. We were not building enough.
Kevin, you're right. Now, interestingly, it is a tap that the government can turn on if it chooses to, because there are more people wanting to come to Australia than are let in. We do put reasonably high barriers up, and that involves having a certain amount of finances and having job capacity. So if the government is stuck, it could do that, but I don't think it will. I think it's going to actually just be more steady as she goes at the moment and see how things go.
Always good talking to you, Michael Liardi from Metropole Property Strategist. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
I'm going to talk to Dr. Andrew Wilson right now. He's on the phone. G'day, Andrew.
G'day, Kevin. How are you today?
Good morning. Yeah, well, thanks, mate. Firstly, I want to just cover off on a point from yesterday's show that I might ask you for your comment. Because in yesterday's show, we had a call from, it was Lynn. And she was complaining about the Home Price Guide, which is a new website by Domain, her view that it was grossly inaccurate on her particular property. I actually penned a note to Damon. I just forget. Damon Pizarro, isn't it, Andrew?
That's correct.
Yeah, Damon Pizarro from Domain, and mentioned to him the story and asked him for some comment. And I'm hoping that we'll get him on the show tomorrow. He's quite happy, Andrew, for you to make some comment. But I just wanted to quickly read the points that Damon made back to me. What did he say? He said he was looking after his kids this weekend. Anyway, that's beside the point. Andy Andrew will be well placed to discuss, which I'll do in just a moment. Our simple goal, and this is Damon from Domain saying this, our simple goal is what we want to do is help people understand their home and its neighbourhood. Accepting that the estimates are not always perfect, we are eager to talk to people about this so that we can enhance what we do, what we provide to Australian households. Addressing the specific points, the price range given is wide because each home is unique. The estimate cannot take a level of finish and speciality features into account. The wide range describes the uncertainty around the output of any automated estimate. Of course, these are just desktop estimates. No one's actually seen the property. For a more precise value, Damon says homeowners should contact a property professional. That would be either a valuer or a real estate agent. Damon goes on to say that we will also have a way for homeowners to claim their home on Domain and provide improved information about their home. That's going to help Domain to enhance the accuracy of these price estimates that they show. Now, that's not available just yet, but we're hoping that we'll talk to Damon tomorrow and he'll give us a bit more information. Sometimes the estimates are not quite in the ballpark. Domain are eager to investigate those cases so that we can identify what's causing the problem. If any real estate agent finds that there is a big difference between the estimate and what they are selling the properties for, they should talk to their Domain contact so that it can be investigated. Well, I'm keen also to talk about how consumers can do this, because I think that link needs to be there as well. As Lynn correctly pointed out, she's very keen to make sure that it's a true reflection of the value of her property. So Lynn, we're endeavouring to get Damon on the show tomorrow, and we will certainly put that question to him about what contact points we can make. I think Damon gave us a very good rundown there, Andrew. I don't know if there's anything more you wanted to add.
No, well, absolutely, Kevin. And look, at the end of the day, it's the market set price property. We're not talking about a fridge or a TV here. It's something where buyers and sellers sort of engage, and every buyer and every seller is different in time and space. Buyers have different capacities and sellers have different agendas. And look, we see those reality auction shows, The Block comes to mind, and we can see almost identical properties being sold for widely different prices within a half an hour of each other
in
an auction environment. And that just reflects what happens in market.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can understand, Lynn's frustration there. She bought a property. The specifics are was she paid over $1 million for it. She then spent about $300,000 doing it up, and on the website it says that it's probably worth about $400,000 to $500,000. So she was horrified, and obviously it's wrong, but these things need to be corrected, Andrew.
Well, yes, but at the end of the day, Kevin, it's a starting point. It's a guide. And as you correctly pointed out, the real professional, the real experts are the professionals on the ground.
Yeah, well,
the ones that know the street and the neighbourhood backwards.
Yeah, I know. We just can't accept that it's wrong, though, because buyers will look at this and that could heavily influence whether or not she can sell the property. So I do understand her concern, and it's something that I think, and I'm pleased that Damon's response was so positive. So it'll be good to follow it through.
Well, it will, and it'll be interesting to see what the new program is that they're developing. Sounds great.
Yeah, well, it's obviously where you can claim your own property, and I think that's a good move. Andrew, lots of stuff I want to get through with you today, and unfortunately we've pushed for time, but let's turn the focus on Ipswich, which we promised to do.
Yeah.
And can I say, actually, I promised to do Chermside, but I'll do Chermside next week.
The next week.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me about Ipswich.
Well, looking quite good. We're talking about the suburb Ipswich here, of course, Kevin. Ipswich is a local government area, a wide local government area in southeast Queensland, part of Greater Brisbane. And but the suburb of Ipswich is actually showing some quite healthy growth. Recently, we've been tracking prices growth for houses over the last 6 months of 5.5%, median there of $349,000. Smallest sales that we've recorded so far, 26. But a market that's certainly doing better than others in terms of some of those outer suburban Brisbane markets. And
yes.
Also, I think what's quite interesting with Ipswich is the types of yields that
investors are getting, yeah.
So a good target, I think, for investors. And
Look,
I think Ipswich being a bit of an underperformer, issues about the local economy, unemployment has been a concern, but some good news on the local economy there in Ipswich region, down to 5.3%. over August. And look, there are important influences on what happens in housing market concerns over job security and unemployment. So look, some bright lights there on the economic front for Ipswich, and the prices are growing, and it's faster than the Brisbane rate.
Very affordable too, under 350,000. I think the points you make in your report, which is available on the 4BC website, by the way, too, each time we do a market focus with Andrew, we'll put his report up on our website so you can go and have a look at it. But the point you make in one of your closing paragraphs, it's an encouraged market for investors because of affordability, rising prices and rents, and attractive yields, as you mentioned as well, Andrew.
It ticks all the boxes, doesn't it, Kevin?
And
the upside is always there for most Brisbane property at the moment. It's been a modest to moderate cycle so far, and just starting to show some signs again of prices growth. I think prices growth, although it won't be as strong as last year in Brisbane, it'll still be one of the better performers or one of the best performers of any of the capital cities this year. So just keeping on. But we need to get the local economy up and running, I think.
Indeed we do. And, mate, we're just about out of time, but auctions for this weekend?
Well, it's a holiday. Enjoy your holiday, Kevin. It's, we're down to 70 auctions this weekend, which isn't too bad. 75 auctions, which is up on the 70 that we had the same holiday weekend last year. But auction numbers have been very strong in Brisbane, as we've discussed this year so far. Clearance rates down a little bit over September, but we're still, as I said before, tracking some prices growth, and I think the prospects for spring are still pretty good in the auction market in Brisbane.
Good on you, mate. Nice talking to you. We'll talk to you next week. We'll have a look at Chermside, and thanks again for your input. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
And we've had a couple of callers too wanting to know how they can get to that site we've been referring to. You can go to domain.com.au, and when you get there, you'll see a blue band across the top that says Domain Home Price Guide. How much is your home worth? Find out for free. That's the area. Go to that, put your address in, and you can find out. And we'll get more on that for you hopefully tomorrow. If we don't do it tomorrow, I guarantee we'll do it. The McGrath Report has just been released, and this is an annual report, and John McGrath actually analyses the Australian residential property market. It's a great read, and we can tell you how you can get a copy of that too, but the author of that joins me, John McGrath. Hi, John.
G'day, Kevin. Thank you very much. We try and do our best. It's an interesting market, isn't it?
Oh, it's a fascinating... Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, because in your opening, your message, you say it's the most fascinating period you've seen in Australian residential real estate in the last 50 years. What makes it so fascinating from your point of view?
Yeah, good question. Look, I think it's a few things, Kevin. We've seen Sydney has been almost an unprecedented growth spurt in the last 3 years. So as we came out of the GFC and the market stabilised, we've seen about a 50% growth in the last few years, which is very, very strong, as anyone that's been in the market for a while would know. Melbourne hasn't been too far behind either. So you've seen Sydney and Melbourne have been incredibly strong markets. And interestingly, normally when the Australian market is in recovery mode, you see basically every capital city and a lot of the regionals growing at a similar time, maybe not identical pace, but at a similar time. What we've seen now is Sydney and Melbourne almost decoupling from the rest of the Australian market, and they've sort of shot off. And the rest of the Australian market is somewhere between flat to beginning its recovery cycle, and certainly southeast Queensland, which you and I talk about a lot, we think is in the early stages of what will be a 3 or 4 year recovery cycle.
Yeah. John, I want to talk to you about a number of things in the report, but just before we get to that, what's your take on what's happening currently with the share market and its likely impact on property prices?
Well, it's interesting because the Australian share market, obviously, as has the Chinese and I guess everywhere around the world, it's taken a bit of a bath. So there's one of two things can happen there, and I think we're still waiting to see. Either people see that it is a dangerous place potentially to have your money invested, and a lot of people sort of come back to property. Or in some instances where people are squeezed and they lose money on the share market, in some instances they actually have to sell property to get themselves out of trouble. Look, I think it's too early to see yet because we've basically seen a pretty strong share market for a few years and the last few months have been very, very volatile. I think if it continues to drop, we will see some of that money coming back into property as people are looking to protect their capital base.
Yeah. In your report, you talk about the Manhattan effect. What do you mean by that?
Well, when you have a think of Manhattan and you see that basically it's no longer an area where first home buyers or young couples can really afford. They need to move out to the boroughs and out to Brooklyn and get out of Manhattan because it's really become a very exclusive and very highly priced enclave. I think that if you look at inner Sydney, for example, so let's say that's within 7 to 10 kilometres of the city, it's somewhat become like Manhattan, that we're really looking at $1 million to $1.25 million as a as an average price for almost anything in those areas. And for young couples, even those that are doing quite well, it's very difficult to afford property in inner Sydney. So I think what's going to happen is either people, young people are going to stay at home a bit longer with their folks and buy a property and rent it out until they can afford to live in it, or indeed they're going to be pushed a little bit further out into the suburbs. And I think that's not all over a bad thing, because they do get creative and we start to unlock pockets of real estate, and Sydney's been a great example of some suburbs that a lot of people never would have dreamed of living in, and they've become, you know, very, very exciting and edgy little precincts nowadays because people are moving in and they're renovating and retail's following them in. And so I think, you know, this is just what we've seen elsewhere in the world, where prime cities and the inner part of prime cities becomes a very expensive product when it comes to real estate.
Yeah, well, talking about unlocking those suburban pockets, and you talked there about infrastructure, there's some classic examples of that. Let's have a look firstly at Brisbane. What would you highlight there as some of the areas that have been opened up in recent times that are well worth having a look at because of infrastructure changes?
Well, look, I think when you look at some of the new roadways and the infrastructure, if you look at, you know, sort of 20 or 30 minutes outside of Brisbane, either on the coast or just inland, you're starting to see some great pockets there. And one of the areas that we did talk about as an area that we think is going to grow is Murray in Brisbane, because you've got a lot of industrial activity in part of that area and part of that suburb, and we think that the infrastructure is going to allow people with factories and industrials and warehouses to push those further out. And some of these inner suburbs that do have some commercial and industrial activity are going to become, like Botany and Mascot in Sydney,
yes, yeah,
are going to become very, very popular areas. We also think that, you know, Kevin, some of the regional spots, and particularly, you know, between Gold Coast and Brisbane, areas like Paradise Point, which we're looking to open office in the near future, people will start doing more telecommuting and come to Brisbane 2 or 3 days a week. They'll work from home a few days a week, and that's not technically infrastructure, but it's IT advancements will allow people to work a little bit more remotely than they have in the past and get to enjoy beautiful lifestyles, which might be, you know, 30 to 45 minutes out of Brisbane, but they're going to be able to work in that remote manner going forward.
Some of the things that you talk about in your report there, and getting back to the Manhattan effect, these create great challenges for local planners. And I noticed in there you talk about the global vertical villages that are going to be created. It creates a lot of problems or challenges for planners, for town planners, doesn't it?
Well, it does really, but I think it's an important part of the solution is these infill developments where there is opportunity in a city. And I think that whilst a lot of people inherently are against development and high rises, I think when you're talking about an inner urban environment, it is the natural and logical way to go, rather than this continued urban sprawl further and further and further out of the suburbs, which requires a lot more infrastructure. I think if you can just sort of take advantage of the opportunities that are sitting under our nose in a Sydney, Brisbane or Melbourne, in the big cities, there is going to be a great opportunity. But the problem is, of course, you know, you need to be able to cope with the influx of population in and around. So, you know, you've got car parking issues, you've got all sorts of other activities, you've got pollution issues. So those things need to be dealt with. But I do think that there is really a need in the big cities to be doing more development of medium and high density closer to the CBDs.
Yeah, well, last week, of course, the Australian Bureau of Statistics warned that our population growth is slowing. What's your take on that in terms of its slowdown? Is it going to pose much of a risk for the economy? And also, is it going to pull the rug out from underneath some of our property markets?
No, look, I don't think so, Kevin. Look, it's still growing. It's just growing at a lesser rate. And I think that we are, particularly from where Asia, our position with Asia, our relationship, connection and proximity to Asia, which is really where the population is, you know, undergoing an unprecedented boom, we are going to be an address of choice, a country of choice, where a lot of people are looking to move from some of those hugely populated Asian countries. And China has been an incredible example the last few years, the amount of immigration and investment we've seen in Sydney from China, Hong Kong and the other Asian regions is phenomenal. And I think it's a healthy thing. It's, you know, part in every... I saw a statistic the other day, Kevin, that I hadn't heard before, but it was over 50% of Australians have at least one parent that was born overseas. And
wow.
And I just did a little straw poll today, and there was 8 people in the room, and 6 of them had parents, one parent at least that was born overseas. So I think that speaks to the fact that we are a melting pot. We are a nation of many different nationalities, and that's what makes us so successful and interesting. So I think this is just a part of that. Asia is a great location to have. It's booming, even though, albeit it slowed down a bit of late, but I think generally still it's going to boom in for the next decade, and we should be the recipient of much of the halo effect there.
John, APRA's moves to make it tougher for investors to get finance is seeing a lot of investors retreat. We're hearing a lot of reports about that, even in this last week. Properties in some of the classic Sydney investor suburbs are just not selling. Do you think they've actually moved too far on the bank and the banks?
Well, yeah, it's interesting, Kevin, because let's look at interest rates, which have been a key driver of this property boom certainly in Sydney and Melbourne, because the Reserve Bank has wanted to reduce rates to help prop up the other ailing sectors of the economy, and for example, retail. So if you pull the lever on interest rates, well, then it does buoy the retail, but it also buoys the real estate market, which is they're trying to cool down. So I think APRA has seen an opportunity to just calm down the investor demand, which was becoming prolific. It was over 50% of the approved loans in the last 12 months were going to investors, which is normally about 25%. So really we'd seen a doubling effect of the investor demand. So whilst I'm a free trade guy, I kind of like to have as few manufactured imposts on the market and let free trade sort of find its right level. I do see that there are opportunities to sort of pull the lever like this and maybe just calm down the investor market a little bit.
And your tip for Tuesday, what's going to happen with interest rates?
I think at the moment things might just sit still for a while. I know that some people have been suggesting it could go either way and even down, but I think that it might just sit for a little while and just see what happens over the Christmas break.
Well, it's a great report, and unfortunately, John, we are out of time. I'd love to talk to you a lot more, but the report, the McGrath report, we're going to make it available. I think we can. We've got a copy of it, John. Is that okay with you if we put it up on our website?
That'd be great, Kevin. Look forward to hearing what your listeners think.
Yeah, well, okay, we'll load it up for you. Just go and have a look at my page on 4bc.com.au. You'll find it there. It's a download. It's a great report. Well worth having a read. John McGrath, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Kevin. Goodbye.